Well, when I first started out writing the book, I was seeing clients for a very long time, probably, gosh, over 13 or 14 years now. And what I found is that, a lot of them had the same questions going on over and over again about, really at the end of the day, everyone just wants to feel at peace and they want to be at happy. They want to have a great connection to their own inner self. But, they'd also like to have healthy relationships. They'd like to have work that's meaningful to them and just have a life that they love and have a life that they enjoy and also simultaneously make a difference to the world and somehow, be of contribution. And sometimes with all that's going on in our lives and around the world, we can get really overwhelmed and we don't know how to do that. And we think, oh, God, I don't know how to do that, how to change my own life, let alone change the world. So what I did was I wrote the book for people who are maybe, just going through their life and they know that sometimes it's just a, vague feeling of there's something more. I want to be my true self. I don't know how to go about it. I want to make a difference in the world. I don't know how. And so this is kind of a guidebook to really connecting to your true self. And from there, just by being your true self, making the best contribution that you can to the planet, really, just by doing that.
Ah, okay. Now, in your book, when you're talking about this new chapter, you suggest that to do this new chapter in our lives and to make it the best chapter possible, that our task is to be the best page we can be,
mm-hmm.
Which is kind of a smaller chunk, a one page versus a whole chapter.
Yes.
So would you expand a little bit? I think you started to make mention about that.
Sure. The way that I kind of angled the book was, we're going into a new chapter and here's how to be the best page that you can be in our new chapter, because really the new chapter that we're all creating as a humanity and collectively is only going to be as good as all the pages within it. And we are all 6 billion plus of us, we are all a page in that new chapter. And like I say in the book, if you're not writing your page, you can be sure someone else is writing that for you. So you might as well pick up the pen and you write your best page. And the way that I, say that you can be your best page is be your true self. And, well, how do we do that? Well, we listen to our instincts, feel your feelings, speak your truth, because all of those things that are inside you are, like little Hansel and Gretel cookie crumbs saying, this way, turn left, turn right, go this way. And, that's how we become our true self. It's just in the moment, every day, listening to that.
Hmm. Ah, okay. Well, I mean, it's a good advice, of course, to when you say listening to your instincts and following your intuition. I don't know if you can give us clues. I mean, as a trained intuitive that's been doing this for many years, I'm sure this is second nature to you. Most of us have got a bit of a gap to bridge because we're not on a ongoing basis as much as you do, haven't tuned in. So can you help us to get a little bit more moving in that direction?
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, I think it's just a matter of practice in that our intuition is just like any muscle, that we all have it. And it's just like any muscle, when you go to the gym and when you train it, it gets bigger and stronger. And when we sort of don't listen to it, that's when it lapses. So it's a matter of practicing every day. And, well, how do we do that? I think one thing that kind of is a stumbling block to our intuition is doubt and the mind. Because quite often, I think everyone out there listening will resonate to this, we're all pretty good at hearing our intuition in the first instance. So I'm sure everyone out there can relate to a time in their life maybe, or even it might happen every day, where they think, oh, I just have this feeling, for some strange reason to not go to this particular place today, or to go to this particular place today, or to pick up this book, or to call this friend. And then sometimes the mind cuts in or doubt cuts in and, you sort of wave that initial instinct away, and then sure enough, a few hours or days or weeks later, you realize, oh, gosh, I should have listened to that. I should have listened to myself. And particularly with the bigger things in life, when we're getting those taps on the shoulder that maybe it's time to leave a job or leave a relationship, quite often we'll get little taps that our gut instinct knows. You just feel, you know, I think I need to be changing here. And, you know, sometimes we don't, because the voice of the mind or our own fear or our doubts slip in. And the mind is really good at saying, well, you know, if you leave your job, you're going to be out of work. Or if you leave the relationship, you're going to be alone forever. And, you know, we get scared by that voice, by our mind and by our fears. And so we slip back into our comfort zone. So it's really training yourself to listen to that first intuition, and just, it's like jumping off a cliff into the unknown, following it, just following it wherever it may lead you, and trusting it, trusting that it's leading you into a good place.
Ah, okay, so it does take a little bit of courage, but I guess, like you were saying, most of us have at some point in time gotten that instinct or that first impression, or just had a thought come up, and then we set it aside for some reason, and later to discover, oh, wait a minute, that was something that I should have paid attention to.
Exactly. And you know, and you know, even as an intuitive, you know, I'm human as well, and I've got my own little, you know, doubts and fears, especially when I get an intuition to do something really big and really, you know, new to me. So for an example, in my own life, I got, you know, a very strong intuition just to book a trip to the US, for example, and, you know, just play it by ear and have no set plans, and just, you know, my guide said, just book the trip. And sure enough, the second I booked the trip, really the first 2 months of our itinerary just suddenly started falling into place. I started getting emails from people and phone calls from people and, you know, just invitations from friends or friends of friends to come and stay with them. Just one thing after another fell into place, and it was amazing. And contrary to that, a couple of years ago, my mind really wanted to do a trip back to London, and I got message after message in my own inner self, no, this is not the time, this is not the time. And, you know, I couldn't even, every time I even went to the travel agent, something stopped me and said, no, now's not the time. So I listened to that. And sure enough, the second that I decided, fine, now is not the time, I won't go, all of these opportunities opened up for me in Sydney. So I think when you listen to that, even when there's no logical reason, and I think this is a really big key for people, because people are waiting for the logic to kick in. They say, well, if I'm being guided to do something or being guided not to do something, what's the logical reason? And what I would most like to say to people is, put the logic aside. You know, sometimes there is no logical reason in the moment, but the reason for your intuition will always, always be revealed to you the second that you really commit to your decision, whatever that is.
Okay.
Mm.
All right, so it's that trusting in it first,
mm-hmm.
and then from reviewing it in hindsight, you can go, oh, well, now it makes sense,
yeah,
as I look back on,
yeah,
it.
Yeah, and set aside the need for logic.
Ah,
yeah.
Okay, so understand and do what you can to be at peace with, well, this may not make sense immediately.
Yes,
may not
exactly.
Have, you know, but we're dealing with something that in time that will become clear.
Mm-hmm.
Because you do end up getting that feedback at some point, right? It doesn't stay illogical forever.
Absolutely. I find that really, you know, from almost the moment that you follow your intuition and the moment you step off that cliff and decide, right, I am going to do this, you know, I'm going to leave my job, for example, and it's the most scariest thing in the world, often I find, and with my clients, that, you know, sure enough, as soon as they've done that, maybe the next day, maybe the next week, sometimes that very evening, you know, they'll get some sort of job offer or a doorway opening that leads them straight away to the next thing. Sometimes there is a little bit of a gap, you know, of time. And I say to people, well, you know, that's just like, you know, there's always a dawn before the sun comes up, but the sun will always come up, always.
Okay. So it's learning to be more comfortable in that place of the pre-dawn. It's,
exactly.
It's not the light, we're in the dark. But to know,
yeah.
It's going to come up again. Yes, it is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so that's important. And I guess this ties into the idea that you make mention that many of us aren't behind the wheel of our own car.
Yeah.
We're being taken for a ride somehow.
Yeah, well, in that's a really good way of putting it, actually. In my book, A New Chapter, I've actually got a whole chapter on this because, you know, it's so relevant to a lot of people, and I called that chapter Get Back in Your Driver's Seat. And, you know, people often sort of at first glance say, well, hang on, if I'm not driving the car, who is? But if you look at your life, you know, quite often we're so pushed and pulled in obvious ways and not so obvious ways. And I think in the more obvious ways, you know, it's the opinions of other people who, you know, always, you know, override our own intuition and say to us, well, I don't think you should do that for some reason, because really they might have their own fears and issues and beliefs around something. So it's everything from the voices of friends and family who, you know, often are well-meaning. But I always say, at the end of the day, no one really knows what you are here to do and who you really are better than you do. So if you're really feeling something, you know, understand that people often are coming from well-meaning places, but quite often the opinions of other people do influence us. And this goes even back to childhood. We've got the voice of our parents and our school teachers and society and the media, and all of these voices are on top of us. Like I make the analogy of like a big cloak. And sometimes we just need to take that cloak off us, because when we take that off us, we can find our true voice inside us, and that's our true self. And, you know, it even goes down to our cellular memory. I was so intrigued to read a couple of years ago that scientists have discovered that cellular memory contains the beliefs and the memories of our parents and our grandparents and who knows how far back. So our DNA actually doesn't know the difference between something our parents or grandparents went through and something we're going through. So, for example, if they went through the war or through the Depression and they've got issues around poverty or fears around stability or security, we are carrying those very same fears, thinking that they're our own fears when really they belong to our parents and grandparents and even further than that.
Wow.
Yeah, so this is why I say, you know, get back in your driver's seat, because quite often, you know, cellular memory is driving your driver's seat, an old school teacher is driving your car, parents, friends, family, society, what you heard on the news last night, all of those things. So, you know, just take your place in your driver's seat. That's what I have to say.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And I guess that seems like, if you can let me know, does that ties in being basically reclaiming the driver's seat of our life?
Mm-hmm.
Is that also something that happens when we're being our true self?
Yeah, definitely. It's all part and parcel of the same thing, really. Being in your driver's seat is, you know, being your true self. In the book, in a new chapter, I've scattered a lot of practical exercises throughout the book that people can do, because, you know, I know if they're hearing this, they're resonating with this concept of, well, yeah, I want to be my true self, and how? And, you know, surely, you know, sure enough, reading a book is going to help. But it was very important to me to put in practical exercises in there that people can do to help them find out, well, you know, how do I connect with my true self and my true story?
I'm wondering, for our listeners, Donna, might you be able to share perhaps an example of something you mentioned? There was a number of them in the book. There's something that we can, you know, have you share with us of a possible exercise that might be helpful?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Let me see. I'll try and find one that I think people would like. Let me just see here.
Okay. It's not the hold your breath underwater for 10 minutes, is it?
No. I've got one here that's...
Okay. That one's so hard to do.
I've got one here that's put your true story first. And, you know, it's a long exercise, and it's a good one if you can sit with yourself with a pad and a pen and a journal. And I, you know, encourage people, if they don't have one, to get themselves a journal, because writing it out really... That allows your essence to come through, the you know, the subconscious to come out, and the mind gets out of the way as you're writing. and with Put Your True Story First, I ask people to ask themselves, who are you living for and who are you trying to impress? Whose story are you trying to fit into? And write a list. And ask yourself, how does trying to fit into these people's stories affect you personally? And be completely honest, there are likely positive and negative points that will come up. And how would putting your story first affect your relationship with these personal people? And what is stopping you from putting your story first? What are you scared will happen? And what would be the best possible outcome of you putting your true story first? And what I mean by that, what I mean by true story is, I'll give you a really good example. I was reading just the other day in a magazine about this woman who, she said, you know, she had so much pressure from her mum to, or her mother, to buy a house, because in her mother's generation, this was, you know, one of the most important things, to buy a house for security. And, you know, in our time and our day and age now, especially with the current economic climate, sometimes it's, you know, not always the wisest financial decision at a particular time to buy a house. And this woman's instincts, you know, were telling her not to buy a home, that financially it wasn't a good decision for her. And also, she wanted the freedom of not buying a home. She quite enjoyed renting because she enjoyed moving around. Her very nature was quite nomadic and gypsyish, and that's what she enjoyed, that's what she loved. But she decided to do what her mum felt best. And so that's a really typical example of putting her mother's story and her mother's story for her own life ahead of her own story. So if that particular woman was perhaps doing this exercise, she might have wanted to ask herself, well, what was she scared was going to happen if she put her true story first? And it can be anything from, you know, disappointing her mother to, you know, buying into the fear of, oh gosh, if I don't buy a house, maybe I'll end up homeless one day or not financially stable. So, you know, sometimes we aren't even aware of how influenced we are by these things. And, you know, unfortunately, the result of that particular story was that she wasn't able to make her payments and she did lose the house. But she's now happier than ever because she's actually got her dream home now, which she's renting. So it's really important to take time to sit down and get clear on little things like that, which are really big things of, am I living my true story or am I actually living my dad's story or my mum's story?
Wow. And just taking some time to sit quietly and make some notes about that,
yeah.
Posing those questions. I could see where that would be very helpful.
Yeah.
And we were talking, I guess, at the large scope, there's so many things going on in the world, and 6 billion people, and each of us is one of 6 billion.
Mm-hmm.
That's, you know, like, oh my gosh, what can little old me do to make a difference, you know, in how the world's going to unfold? And I'm just kind of wondering what you might say about that.
Well, you know, my guides showed me once, and they've kept showing me, this really beautiful analogy of a jigsaw puzzle. And they said every single person on this planet is a piece of that puzzle. And if you don't do your piece, essentially that jigsaw puzzle doesn't get finished. So, you know, look at yourself like a jigsaw piece. And, you know, I'm sure that everyone listening has done a jigsaw puzzle, you know, in their childhood, if not recently. And, you know, imagine that jigsaw puzzle. And as massive as it might be, you'll always notice when there's one piece missing. It stands out, you know, like a light bulb.
Mm-hmm.
So think of yourself that way, that doesn't matter how small you are, doesn't matter if there's 6 billion pieces of our collective jigsaw puzzle, you are a piece. And if you're not being your piece and, you know, contributing it to the greater puzzle, that puzzle's going to wait and wait and wait, and it's calling you, and it's calling you to do what you need to do and do what you came here to do, so that you can help finish our collective story. And, you know, I just bring it back to the point of the book of a new chapter. You know, you're a page in that new chapter, and all you need to do to be your best page is just be your true self, whatever you feel in that moment. And it's not always a big thing. It's not always this massive mission of, oh, I need to, you know, become the president, or I need to be like Oprah, or I need to be this massive person. You know, sometimes your purpose is to give birth and to be a parent to a child who's going to make an amazing difference. Sometimes your purpose is just to show kindness. just to, you know, be that person who lets someone in ahead of you at the traffic that day, or, you know, notice if someone's in a little bit of distress in front of you at the supermarket. Maybe they're just missing 5 cents and they just need a little bit of help. Maybe someone just needed a smile that day. I remember this beautiful story of this guy, and he said that, you know, one day he was really, you know, contemplating committing suicide, and someone walked past him and just said something really simple but beautiful to him, like, oh, you know, g'day mate, how are you? And he smiled at him. And he said that completely, it just did something to him. It shifted his perspective on humanity. He was down in the dumps. He felt like, you know, no one cared. And that completely changed his life around. He didn't go home and commit suicide like he thought he would. He went on to continue to live his life. Meanwhile, that person who smiled, they just smiled. So, you know, we don't know sometimes just what effect we're having on people, and we think, oh, God, what can I do? What difference can I make? Not knowing that maybe our smile that day did something to someone. Maybe letting someone in the traffic, maybe that person was on their way home and they were really stressed and they were going to go home and take their anger out on their partner or their children. And just because, you know, you let them in the traffic, straight away maybe they calmed down and that completely changed the course of their evening and the course of their family's evening. So just showing kindness, that's the one thing that everyone can do.
Ah, okay. And does it cost much to do that?
No, it doesn't cost anything, and that's a good thing.
Oh, okay.
Doesn't cost anything.
Okay, I was just wondering, you know, it's like you have to have so much in your bank account to show a little kindness.
No.
Okay,
no.
So income is not a factor in being able to show kindness.
Absolutely not.
Well, this is important to know. I mean, that way, you know, if your ship hasn't come in yet, you can still put on a happy face and smile at someone, and literally, like your example says, you could be turning someone's life around with something simple like a, you know, a hello, good day, mate, and a smile.
And you know, I've actually got a smile exercise in the book, and I want people to try it right now. Just smile now for like a few seconds, and then, you know, now just do a big frown, and you can feel. You can feel the shift in your energy. You can feel the shift in your cells. You can feel the shift in your emotions. So I want you to smile again, because we want to end on a good note. Smile.
Thank you. I wasn't sure if I could go on with the show.
Yeah.
With that frown.
I want you to smile, Ken, because we don't want you frowning for the next while. But you know, that's just one exercise to show how quickly and how dramatically we can shift our emotional state and our cellular state. And I like what you just said about, well, if we're still waiting for our ship to come in, when you smile, what you realize is that ship is here the second that you let it in. It's, imagine there's like a veil right in front of you. The second you smile, bang, the ship's there. It, you know, we determine whether our ship is there or not. You know, I'm a really big fan of our Esther and Jerry Hicks and Abraham and what they have to say. And, you know, they say, you know, Abraham says again and again and again, everything that you want, everything that you are, everything you can possibly imagine is already there for you. And it's just a matter of letting it in. And, you know, it sounds silly and it sounds simple, but even just smiling straight away, that starts to change your vibration. It starts to change your cells. It starts to change your emotional energy. Instead of feeling upset about something, you might in that instance be able to shift to feeling gratitude about what you have, even if all you have in a particular moment is your life and your health, or even if you don't have your health, you have your life. And straight away that starts bringing all that beautiful stuff that's right there waiting for you in.
Ah, wow. It's interesting because I've seen some examples and you're reminding me to make a change here, I'm going to get a small mirror because I'm at my desk and at my computer a fair amount, and I'm looking on the BBS.com Advanced Living site, and I'm seeing your information and this picture of you smiling and just full of joy, and it's like, oh, well, that's a nice face to look at, and, then, you know, and I thought, okay, well, that's easy to smile when I see that, then I thought, okay, well, what if I had a little mirror so I could check in and see, well, what's my facial expression? Mm-hmm. I've got phone calls to make or something to do or mm-hmm. someone comes into the room and I might have to do a quick check now and then to see, you know, did I remember to put on my special free makeup,
mm-hmm.
the smile.
Mm-hmm. Yep. That's true. Smile and also gratitude, really. You know, I know it's been said a lot and there are books around it, but really it's such a simple thing. But if we're grateful for what we have and, you know, remind ourselves of, you know, there's a lot of things that we have, especially in the Western world, you know, in countries like the US and countries like Australia, that we just take for granted that a lot of people don't have, be it, you know, water coming out of a tap, clean, fresh water, or, you know, fresh air, space, education, whatever it is. You know, we need to have gratitude for everything that's in our lives, and usually people will find that they are much more wealthy and much more well off than they thought they were 1 minute before they thought of that gratitude.
Hmm. Wow. Well, there's an important piece, and important especially if we start to contemplate. There's just major global issues: global warming, peace, climate change, distribution of wealth and resources, conflict of all kinds. And I'm just wondering, can you interrelate that with you know, bring it kind of down to earth for us on our own personal growth journey?
Sure. Well, you know, when I was writing a new chapter, it was really important for me to interconnect both our personal growth journeys and what's happening in the wider world. Because what I found was that there were a lot of books out there that focused on the self, which is wonderful. And there were a lot of books and material out there around what's happening with the world. But there weren't as many books really showing us the connection between the two and showing us why it's important you know, to be looking at both and showing us how each affects the other. And what I mean by that is when, you know, when we are our true self, there is a purpose for that that's greater than the personal. It's not just about living our best life and, you know, manifesting this great car or things like that, although that may be your reality and if it is, great. Having a personal awakening and having being the best you can be is really your contribution to creating the best world and planet that we can be. And vice versa, you know, what's happening out there in the world, we can't really fix these global problems and global issues if we haven't looked at our own self. And also, you know, what's happening outside influences so drastically and dramatically what's going on in our inner world. So our inner world really affects our outer world. Our outer world affects our inner world. So really the two have to go hand in hand and they have to work together. It's, you know, it's no use sitting on a mountaintop and meditating and, you know, just, you know, that's great, but then what? Then what do you do with that? And likewise, we have all of these, you know, global forums and politicians discussing the state of affairs, but if they're going home and their own inner self is not at peace, nothing's going to come of that. I write a little story in the book and I sort of say, well, look at it this way, you know, whatever's going on in your inner world obviously is going to affect your home and family and whoever lives with you. Put all the homes in a particular community or town together and that's the energy that's going to create the energy of that particular town or community. All the communities combined create the energy and state of being of a country. All the countries combined create the state of the world. So that's how, you know, in answer to the question, well, how do I make a difference or how can my issues possibly affect climate change or wars or whatever? That's how. And you know, going backwards, that's how we're going to fix it as well. You know, if we want to fix the world, we have to look at our countries. If we want to fix the countries, we have to look at our individual communities. To fix the individual communities, you have to look at what's going on in each home. And if you want to look at what's going on in each home, really we have to look at what's going on in each self. So it's the inner and outer worlds go hand in hand.
Oh, okay. Well, that's really important then. To if we're going to be spiritual, if I'm hearing you correctly, but that spirituality is certainly important as a starting point, and yet it's not just about, like, go for the Guinness Book of Records mm-hmm. for the longest meditation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I have meditated for 82 years. Yeah, but do you have any friends?
Yeah. that's exactly right, you know. You know, I say it's time to merge our consciousness with action and action with consciousness, because what use is one without the other? What use is consciousness without action, or what use is action without consciousness? We have to have both. We all have a piece of the puzzle. And, for, you know, for people who are familiar with their chakras, the energy centers that go up and down our body, you know, a lot of us that have been on a spiritual path, we're great with the upper chakras. We can meditate till the cows come home, you know. Mm. But when it comes to the lower chakras, when it comes to maybe, you know, having healthy long-term relationships or manifesting abundance, doing work that we love, you know, a lot of people are struggling with that, and vice versa. There are people out there who have no problems creating a, you know, a really great life for themselves materially, but maybe have no clue as far as connecting to their essence or their heart or their spirit, or having a life that's actually really emotionally fulfilling. And, you know, both groups of people have a lot to learn from each other, and it's time to, you know, merge everything, merge consciousness and action, merge our upper chakras with our lower, merge the, you know, the physical parts of ourselves and our physical needs with our emotional and spiritual energy and essence.
Mm. Wow. Okay. So there's a term people talk about on a spiritual path of ascended masters, getting ready for the next life, and a term that I've heard mentioned a number of times is, and it sounds like this applies, is instead of going for being an ascended master, it's like, well, how about if we be a descended master and gain our mastery while we're here on planet Earth?
Oh, absolutely. Getting in touch with our humanness. I talk about this actually in the book because, you know, and this is quite embarrassing to admit, but I've got it in the book, so I have to say it. But I used to call people the humans, really, because I was, you know, I was born, you know, quite awake, I guess, and I just never used to be able to relate to this planet, and I always used to look up at the sky and the stars, and, you know, I just thought I came from out there somewhere, and I was waiting for my people to come back and get me. I wasn't quite sure who my people were, but I knew that, you know, I knew that they were out there and not here. And,
yeah.
You know, and I always had visions of this really different kind of world. And in the visions that I had, people were, you know, kind to each other, and people did work that they love, and everyone was very conscious of the environment. And it was just, you know, a really beautiful place. And I didn't know what that meant, because, you know, I was born in the early 70s, and the world definitely didn't look like that then. And, you know, and I didn't know, was I seeing, you know, visions of our future? Was I seeing something that I was meant to help create? Was I seeing, you know, a past life? Was I seeing a whole other planet that maybe I came from? I didn't know. And, you know, it took me a long time, and it really, also for people to know, it took a lot of years of confusion and, you know, really feeling lost and out of place and feeling like, you know, I completely didn't know what I was doing on this planet, and I couldn't wait to get out of here. And I had this, you know, I'll do my mission, then I'll get out of here. And really a big turning point for me was after 9/11, because, you know, all my life I'd sort of been waiting for the humans to wake up, and I thought, I'll just do my mission, I'll help everyone wake up, and then, you know, we can all get on with the show, and I can get out of here knowing I've done my mission and help the humans wake up. And after 9/11, what I started seeing was this outpouring of love and compassion and connection amongst people, and people starting to really reach out to their neighbors, and people starting to ask themselves, wow, life could be gone in a second, and what am I really doing here, and am I really happy, am I doing what I, you know, my heart wants to do? And did I tell my family, my daughter, my mum, my friend, my husband, my wife, did I tell them this morning that I love them? Because, you know, a lot of people died that day, and they weren't able to tell their families that. So that was a really big turning point with humanity, and it was a turning point for me because I saw everybody opening up to their hearts, and I saw everybody opening up to their soul, and I realized, wow, they're opening up to their spirit and their humanness, and I realized, oh my gosh, I haven't opened up to my humanness. You know, as my heart opened that day, I realized, God, a part of my heart wasn't open. My heart wasn't open to the human part of me, and the human part of me is so beautiful because that's what allows my spirit to live and to be embodied in physical form. And that's so important because, you know, in my conversations and connections with spiritual beings, and I know other intuitives have had this same conversation with their spiritual beings, they are just in awe of us down here because they say, well, yeah, we're in spirit form up here, but you guys get to be in human form. You get to experience life on Earth, and you get to experience the body, and you get to experience how feelings feel in a body. You get to experience touch and taste and hugging and connection and all the dramas of our life, sadness and happiness and grief and despair and joy and all of it. And they are fascinated by all of it. They don't really see it as positive or negative or anything. They just think, wow, this gamut of emotion and experience that you all get to have there. So we're really fortunate being on this planet, in this dimension, on this Earth, in human form. So, yeah, I forgot your original question, but
that's exactly addressing it perfectly, Donna. One of the things... we hear about these prophecies from Nostradamus, from the Hopi Indians, pyramids. I mean, on and on around the things that of some significant changes around 2012. And can you give us some insights and tie that in with perhaps some things in your book?
Sure. I mentioned those prophecies in the book. I mentioned, you know, the Mayan prophecies, the Hopi, Nostradamus, Edgar Cayce. And they all basically saw the same thing. They saw as far ahead as around the end of 2012, and then they didn't see any more. It was like a blank page. And a lot of those prophecies, I feel, and people, even the Mayan elders who are alive today, they feel and they're trying to get the word out, have been misinterpreted because a lot of people see it as the end of the world. And what the Mayan elders in Guatemala now are saying, and what I've always felt myself as well, no, it's not the end of the world. It's the end of the world as we know it. And the way that I've kind of been shown it by my guides is, you know, we have a choice. And we've come to a fork in the road. And if we keep going the way we've been going, yeah, I think we're maybe not going to go in a good direction. But if we start changing, and really now, like now, not tomorrow, not in 10 years, now, if we start changing now in the way that we are living, personally and globally, we really have the potential now to create a whole new chapter in our evolution in the direction of this planet and create the most amazing, you know, reality for ourselves. And, you know, we see this, for example, let's go to the issue of climate change in Al Gore's movie, An Inconvenient Truth. And he said, you know, really, the way that we're going and the way that we're using our resources, we've got another 10 years left before we really are at a point of no return and it will be too late to change. I feel we've got less than 10 years because all of the prophecies really are quite strict about that date, 2012, and I think that they didn't give that to us to panic about. I don't think they gave that to us as any sort of doomsday prophecy. I think they gave that to us as a really beautiful, heads up people, you need to start turning the boat by this date because this is sort of, that's where the corner is coming up. And, you know, in the book I write, you know, if you're turning a moving vehicle and you're going around a corner, you don't just suddenly jerk the wheel right at the corner. So we can't just jerk the wheel. You know, when December 2012 comes, we can't just say, oh my God, we have to change today. Because for anyone who's done that, if you're on, you know, in a car, you'll know what happens if you suddenly jerk the wheel around a corner. You'll lose control.
Mm.
So, you know, when you're coming up for a corner, imagine you're riding a car, you start turning that wheel quite a ways ahead of the corner, and the bigger the vehicle, the further ahead you have to start turning the wheel. And we're a pretty big vehicle, this planet Earth. We're massive. So that's why we really have to start turning the wheel now. And I think we started turning it in a pretty big way after 9/11. that's really when I noticed a significant shift in the way people talked and the thoughts people were thinking, and even the global movement around peace, the global movement around climate change. More people than not are on the same page on those issues. More people than not want peace, want a healthy climate for themselves and their children and grandchildren. So I think we've started turning that wheel, and we've started turning it to create a new reality for ourselves and the planet.
Mm. You know, it's just so exciting to hear you saying that, because for so long, things have operated in kind of an adversarial fashion, very tribalistic. One little group pitted against the other.
Yes.
And here we're coming into this time of one mind, one heart,
mm-hmm.
One planet, people sharing that with each other,
mm-hmm.
and finding common ground. So what an important thing there is, as someone was reminding me, the president of our country, in his efforts to, assuming that he had a plan and wanted to do some good, and yet there's been tremendous loss and of life and of economic stability of our country, and the recommendation that was reminded to me was, for all those things that we find fault with, and there can be plenty of reason for that in the case of our current president, for instance, is to remember to send them love.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an important theme. And and it makes me curious, because you know, part of your book talks about the return of the divine feminine.
Mm.
And I just kind of wonder, because there seems to be this thing that even in families where there can be some kids that are really like out of control or troublesome to the family, somehow mom always loves them.
Mm, definitely. And, you know, just to let people know, with that, you know, return of the divine feminine, when I say feminine, I'm referring to the feminine energy that's in all of us, you know, regardless of whether we're male or female. We all have a masculine aspect and feminine aspects, and, you know, the feminine, the part of us that, you know, is compassionate and nurturing and nourishing and creative and coming from the heart. And that's not, again, that's not to say men are not that, because men have the feminine in themselves as well as women, and just as women have the masculine, which is just as important, which is that assertive part of ourselves, that part that goes out and provides, for example. And I think up until now, the masculine energy has really been valued over the feminine. So all of those things that, you know, our intuition, our creativity, nurturing, nourishing, they've kind of been put as not that important, not as important as making money and going out there and conquering. And really, I think what we are seeing and what we have seen is not so much masculine energy on this planet, but an unbalanced masculine energy, because the feminine has been so denied and repressed. We're not seeing the true masculine energy. We're seeing sort of a, you know, warped out of balance 80-20% of masculine feminine energy. So it's kind of, you know, masculine out of control. And I think what's happening now, as those feminine energies are being allowed to come out more and more, we're going to start seeing those feminine energies more and more in positions of power. And we can only look at this latest election campaign to see how true that is, with you know, Senator Barack Obama, who's very much carrying the balanced energies of masculine and feminine. He's going out there in a, you know, typical masculine way of putting himself out for, you know, position of power to lead a country, but doing it in a way with a lot of compassion and coming from his heart. You know, we had for the first time a woman going for president as well, and so it's just, you know, it's amazing times that we're living in, where we're going to combine, I feel, healthy masculine with healthy feminine. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with power and politics. I think those things have been given a bad name only because of the way in which they've been used. But, wow, what a world are we going to create when we merge power, I mean good authentic power and politics, with compassion and kindness and the heart and the good of all. The good of all, not the good of some, not the good of the elite, not what's good for my little world, but what's good for all. I think we have potential to go into such an amazing direction if we only trust that that's possible. That's, I think, the little gap that we need to all now really focus on right now, trust that that's possible, because I'm hearing a lot of people saying, oh, you know, God, I'd love that to happen, but yeah, right, as if it's going to happen. I feel if we trust it's going to happen, it will happen.
Okay, so that's a very important clarification on the divine feminine, is to connect with that part of us that's in balance, man or woman.
Yes.
We're both at that assertive male nature as well as the balance of that nurturing and compassionate female nature. Okay, and that's I think, an important part of how to make that new page in our book be a lot better.
Yeah, definitely.
Now, I'm just wondering if there was one thing that you could share for people to do right now, what do you think that would be to help create their best self?
I think the easiest thing and the simplest thing they could do is just be in the moment, be in the now. And that's sort of a bit of a buzzword lately, I know. You know, Eckhart Tolle's book, The Power of Now, is doing astounding things. But what it just means is be in the present moment, because when you're in the present moment, you can be guided to the best possible next step for you in the next moment. And the analogy that I kind of use is when we're in the moment, our antenna is connected to our highest self and our highest possible guidance. It's always guiding us to our best possible step forward. And when we're not in the moment, where are we? Well, we're usually, you know, thinking about something in the past, or we're worrying about something in the future, and it's like we're bending our antenna. So when we're in the moment, our antenna is nice and straight and hooked up to our best possible guidance for our best possible movement forward. And that will always guide us to, you know, be it something in our personal lives, be it a next step we need to take with our work or with a relationship, or even in the outer world with something that we need to do for our community. Being in the moment will always lead us in a good direction.
Okay. Now, people are going to want to know, how do I get a hold of your book? How can I find out more about you, Donna?
Yeah. Well, if they can get the book anywhere online, Amazon or Barnes & Noble, and that's available online right now. They can get it in bookstores. If it's not in the bookstore, they can just ask for it, and I'm sure they'll order it in. And also, to get any information about me or to book a soul session or to find out more about soul sessions or anything, actually, they can go to visioningthedreamawake.com. And that will take them to my website, and they can email me if they like, dana@danamerkich.com, and if they've got any information at all.
Okay, would you, and does it take you to the same place if they go to your name, danamerkich.com?
Mm-hmm, yep, so that's D-A-N-A, M for Mary, R for Robert, KICH.com. Visioningthedreamawake.com will take them to danamerkich.com. So they can use either of those. Yeah, that's where they can find information about the book and information about the soul sessions. And as I said, a new chapter is available right now on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com, Borders, wherever they would like to go to get it.
Ah, wonderful. Wow, well, that's just fantastic. I want to thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to share so much wisdom and joy with our listeners, and to I know we're all reminded, if nothing more, try out a smile once in a while.
Yeah, no, exactly. It's really as simple as that. I think, you know, we've made life and the spiritual path a bit more complex than it needs to be. And really, you know, it's true what they say. It is all inside us. And, you know, people read that a lot and hear about that a lot, but it is as simple as that.
Well, with that in mind, Donna, I want to thank you and thank my listeners for tuning in, and invite you to tune in weekly to Advanced Living Radio, Saturdays, 4 p.m. Pacific Time. It's brought to you by AdvancedLiving.com, the home of the amazing Comfort Clock. So blessings to you, Donna, and your work, and to all my listeners, a blessing to you.
And thank you, and thank you for having me on the show. It was really fun talking to you.
Oh, you're welcome. A mutual pleasure. And to all of us, God bless. And until we meet again, goodbye for now. Let's go around.